welcome back, everyone. My name is Meg Ansara, and I am also a partner at 270 Strategies. Most recently was the Battleground States Director for the 2016 Hillary for America campaign. And in 2012, I was a National Regional Director for the Obama re-election campaign in Chicago. Most recently, in your second module, you talked a lot about message, right? How to develop it, how to make sure that it makes sense for your audience, that it's vivid with storytelling, and just very concretely, how to structure it for you and your race. So that's a lot of message development. For this session, we're gonna talk a lot about operationalizing that message. So now that you know your race, you know what you wanna say, how do you actually turn it into an effective campaign? And so we're gonna get really tactical around how does it work, and in particular, talk about how to run an integrated campaign, but also how messaging works throughout all the various facets of a campaign. So we're gonna talk a little bit about kind of overarching themes, we're gonna talk department by department, and then we're gonna talk a little bit about some case studies that hopefully bring this to life and some troubleshooting, and I look forward to your questions. In terms of first and foremost, before we even talk about the messaging mechanics, it's really important that you anchor yourself with your pathway to victory. So put messaging just on pause for a hot second, and we really wanna talk about how are you gonna win? Because that's what this is all about, right? And when we talk about pathway to victory, it's really about getting to that 51%, which is a goal. Really, it's 50% plus one, but 51% is helpful for planning, gives yourself some cushion. And for each campaign, that pathway is gonna look a little bit different depending on the district, depending on who you are and depending on who your opponents are. So it's really important to think about the blend of tactics that you're gonna use. Are you gonna be expanding the electorate through registration? Are you gonna be persuading voters to make up their mind? And then ultimately, what does turnout look like? And each campaign has a different blend of these tactics. And so you really need to think about what makes sense for you. And then based on that pathway, who are your targets? So before you get into any of this planning and mechanics, let's make sure that you're anchored on your pathway to victory. So we talked about sort of that blend of tactics. You first gotta start with who your targets are. The more you know about them, the more effective your campaign's gonna be. You're gonna understand what ultimately motivates them, practical considerations, where to find them, and also what mediums to use to best reach them. You know, we always approach every campaign with an organizer lens, right? Which is not expecting people to come to you, but ultimately to meet them where they're at and move them forward. So the more you know about your audience, the more effective you're gonna be at ultimately connecting them and moving them forward. There are lots of different data sources to use. Obviously, we go to polling, focus groups. Those make a lot of sense. But also really mining your data, right? As you start to launch your campaign, you're gonna build a list. That's a treasure trove of ongoing information about who's raising their hand and saying, I'm interested in you, I wanna know more. The more that you can understand and kind of do a deep dive with your data and analytics, the more you're gonna know about your audience. Similarly, the qualitative feedback that you get from the field can be easy to dismiss, but is ultimately very effective in terms of helping you understand where people are at. And so making sure that you take the pulse of your volunteers, you listen to them and your staff about those just really rich conversations that they're maybe having at the door or on a phone call, maybe even with a family or friend, can ultimately give you those nuggets to really help you understand, again, who your targets are and how to reach them. So many, many different sources in terms of your audience. The more you know about your people and who you're going after, the more you know about how to connect with them. You spent a lot of time in the last session talking about your own story, and it's important to be clear on that, but also to bridge the connection to your targets, right? So how do you connect your personal experience with their values, with their lived experience? And so really thinking about what that message looks like, and then how do you use the multitude of different mediums to reach them? So we're gonna talk a little bit about digital. Digital is increasingly important, particularly for younger demographics. It's where they get their news and information. It's where they connect. For older folks, it may be Facebook, which is growing with their demographic, but also mail. They're used to getting mail at the home, and they look to mail as an information source. So again, the more you know about your audience, the more you're gonna understand which stories you're gonna tell from your own experience, and also which tactics to use. So that's kind of covering with your message. Finally, mobilization. So we talked about who your targets are, what message to use, and ultimately what tactics. And this is where we're going to spend the bulk of the session, is talking about those tactics to ultimately get people to move them to action. It's very easy to, when we think about mobilization, to think just about voting and turnout, incredibly important. That's how you're ultimately going to win the race. But when we think about mobilization, we also want to think about fundraising goals. We want to think about volunteering, right? Even with the most funded campaign, well-funded campaign in the world, you need volunteers to engage. And you also want to make sure that your supporters are connecting and mobilizing their friends and families to help as well. So mobilization's in a broad sense, not just with electoral turnout. So we talked about your pathway to victory and your sort of core frame. Now we need to get into the nitty-gritty around how does it actually work? And it's very easy. Time is your most precious resource, right? When you're building a campaign, it goes quickly. You don't have much time. You got to get a lot done. And it's seemingly impossible. But it's really, really important that you're thoughtful about integration, particularly around message. You don't want a staffer making news with a tweet that goes against your policy or your core message frame. That has happened, right? Similarly, you want to take advantage of every single medium that you have. And it's easy to think, okay, I'm going to set up my digital department, I'm going to set up my field department, which is the voter contact. But people, your supporters, your potential prospective voters, don't experience the campaign as their digital selves and then their field selves, right? They don't say, okay, this is my email self when I'm reading an email, and then this is where I am in terms of opening a door. And your campaign needs to reflect that. So you need to think about the cumulative effect of your tactics and how you are reinforcing the key message, but also translating it for the right medium, right? An op-ed is a different amount of space than a tweet. They all need to come back to the same message frame, but they need to be translated to that medium, but they need to talk to each other, and they need to ultimately make sense from the voter's perspective. So things like looking at your internal meeting schedule, right? How are you making sure that all staff and volunteers are trained on your core message, that they understand how to talk about the environment in whatever their job is, right? So often that looks like a daily meeting, right? An in-depth training, maybe even a staff retreat. It can easily feel like you don't have time for that, but you've got to make time or else it won't happen, particularly early on. Second is actually setting up goals for what does it look like to translate the message in terms of your department, right? We're all data-driven, we're goal-centered. If you can make this concrete in terms of number of hits or number of posts that relate to the environment and making sure that you get coverage, that's going to go a long way in terms of understanding how to translate this core message frame into the day-to-day work of being on a campaign. So there's a lot of different ways in which you can integrate what you're doing and making sure that you're running an integrated and coordinated campaign. Finally, when it comes to message integration, it's really important to think about proactive opportunities, so organizing around a central campaign calendar, but also to run traps on what your capacity is to do rapid response. So moments are going to come up where you're either on the defensive, or it could be a reactive moment that you want to seize on and be on the proactive. And so on campaigns that I've run, we've actually have a very clear sort of marching order, run of show when there's a moment and we've got to get something out quickly. Rehearsing what that looks like, organizing who goes to what the flow is, what review is, can help you understand how to seize moments when they happen. So I just encourage you to think both proactively and reactively in terms of the integration. Let's get into the nuts and bolts of how this looks department by department. So we've talked a little bit about field. Field is the voter contact that you do, right? It's the talking to them at the door, it's talking to them on the phone. And this is a critical way for you to hear back from voters, but also to get your message out. So first and foremost, what I really like to do is to make sure that there's adequate staff and volunteer training, right? Even if people have canvassed before and phone banked before, and often they have not, it's really important that they understand the mechanics and they also understand your campaign and what makes your campaign unique. And so not shortcutting the training for staff and volunteers is critically important. The second thing is actually doing practice role-playing around translating the message frame, your candidate's story, with their own story and connecting the dots between those things. So actually saying, you know, in this race, this issue matters for this district, this issue is a core concern for the candidate, but also here's how it connects to me, here's why I'm volunteering. That can go a long way in terms of being resonant with a prospective voter. The second thing is really thinking about how in your scripts, they're short amounts of text when you're on the phone and you're sending folks to the door, but they're hitting on these environmental issues, those really short, succinct nuggets that they're relatable and can connect. And finally, that your lit reinforces that. So that's the leave behind that folks are gonna have and that they're gonna refer people to when they're having a conversation, and making sure that that echoes and connects and is really accessible. So I really like, when I'm sending people out to the door, to really walk through the literature so they can leverage it and not just sort of say it's an afterthought, but really use it as part of their conversation. So you want a synergy across those platforms, but the biggest thing I would stress in terms of field is making sure that folks understand how to connect to their personal experience, so they're speaking on your behalf, but also being authentic and true to themselves. Data. Data is incredibly important in terms of charting and measuring your progress, and I think that's how we often think about it. But it can be incredibly illuminating in terms of understanding who your supporters are, where there's particular growth that is going to make sense and could present an opportunity down the road. It's also a place where you want to be able to track, particularly for folks who the environmental message most resonates with them, you want to be able to tag that and go to them. These are people who can introduce you, introduce your candidate at an upcoming speech, write a letter to the editor on behalf of the campaign, or someone you're going to lift up in social media. So making sure that you've got the capacity to tag environmental supporters is critically important. The second thing is story collection. So I talked a lot about the power of story, making sure that you've got a reservoir to really collect those nuggets that come through on the phones, you know, in a field office or at the door. You know, you never have too many stories to go back to. And this is a place that's going to be critically important when you think about validators for your candidate and additional spokespeople for the campaign. Making sure that you can come back to those stories will be really critical. Digital. So we talked a little bit about how important digital is in terms of connecting, I would say, with everyone, but particularly for kind of younger demographics who really look at this not just a way to connect with each other, but also where they're getting news and information. So when we're talking about digital, we're talking about email, we're talking about social media, we're talking about content that's distributed, all of those things, digital ads, all of those things kind of live within the ever-growing umbrella of digital. So in terms of using digital effective in terms of a message lens, this is where you really want to highlight specific spokespeople. So it's really about leveraging additional validators who have wider audience and different audience than your campaign does naturally, right? So if you can lift up someone who's got a large following, you're basically getting exposure to their following, which is thereby increasing your reach of the campaign. The second thing is making sure that the content that you're using on digital platforms is not just one directional. The more that you can have a back and forth where people can make it their own, one is they're gonna be more invested in the campaign. And two, they're going to, it's going to be more interesting to their supporters, right? Because there's that personal lens on this. So a great example of this from the 2016 campaign was Snapchat filters. Really easy to do, cheap, and got traction every single time. It's a great way to think about a younger audience, maybe folks that you want to engage on a college or university, or something that's just really local or connected to a holiday or something like that. It's a great way to engage a different type of audience on an important and growing medium or platform, but also goes back to that personalization, right? It's a way for people to pledge their support, but really make it their own. And we know that this is important in terms of helping them get engaged in your campaign and frankly, stay engaged as well. Another great example of this from 2012 is the For All campaign. So it was an effort really focused on folks who are younger, where they had to write sort of the reason of why they were supportive of the campaign. It actually wasn't branded OFA or Obama at all, but it was really clear that it was connected to the campaign. It was super easy for folks to do. They literally just took a picture with they took a Sharpie, they wrote a value on their hand and took a picture like this. And it really helped to expand the breadth. And it also made it feel like the campaign was a fun thing to do. And everyone wants to be part of the cool kids. So thinking about ways in which people can provide and connect those stories to their own experience, really make the campaign their own, is gonna go a long way. And finally, and we've got to this with a little bit with the examples, but really thinking about visuals. We know that a picture people take note of a lot more, and the same with video. So video is an ever-growing platform, and we know that the first 7 seconds of a video are really what makes or breaks content. And so thinking not just about the words of your message, but the visuals that tell it, and making sure that's super accessible and coming through. Finally, whenever you're using video, you wanna make sure that there's text, because a lot of people will watch the video on Facebook or whatever platform while doing other things. Maybe they're in a meeting, maybe they're listening to music, but being able to read the words is actually how they'll be able to follow. So you always want to have the audio as well as the words. So a couple of examples: be super visual, make it fun, make it interesting, and help people make it their own so they can spread it to their own networks. Fundraising. Obviously, in order to do all this work, you have to have money. And in order to have money, you've got to think about, you know, a very diverse fundraising strategy. But this is also a way that you can reinforce your core environmental message, right? People like to identify as a supporter, as an environmental activist or issue. And so making sure that you have fundraising events that are branded in that way, particularly for small donor efforts, online as well as some actual events, it's going to go a long way in terms of getting more people engaged. And also finding a way where people can talk about these issues as a way to sort of explain their support. And so that could be the beginning of a fundraising talk, or it could be, you know, in a letter or an email where they're the sender, to connect the dots between their support and these issues that they care about. So in addition to thinking about how to leverage the donors that you have, you also want to think about the environmental issue itself as a way of finding new donors. So looking at where have there been other efforts, other campaigns, organizations where people have donated, those are all prospective donors to you. And helping to connect the dots between that issue that they cared about, maybe a past ballot initiative or a local nonprofit, and then your candidate's vision for their campaign is going to be an incredibly valuable way to expand the network and to find additional donors. So similar to the fundraising, the political operation is incredibly important in terms of thinking about building your base of support. And this is another way where you basically want to think about a multiplier effect, right? So where are there organizations that have a wide reach, potentially into new people that you haven't reached out to, but also can serve as validators and credentialers, right? So it's one thing for your candidate to say, this is a core issue for me, I believe in it. But it's another thing for a very well-respected organization to be able to say, yep, they're the real deal, and we've endorsed them, or we think you should take a look at them. That only contributes to credibility, particularly for organizations like EDF and others who have a long-standing reputation as being a go-to place for people to get to say, you know, who's the best on these issues? Who can I trust? And so leveraging that trust from sort of long-standing validators can be incredibly important, and it can also open your expensive, you know, your network. Finally, you know, in addition to thinking about how to reach through organizations, these are also people that you can incorporate in, you know, to introduce your candidate at key events, to write letters together or op-eds, right? Having a chorus of voices saying, not only, you know, is this candidate the best on these environmental issues, but they're also positioned to win, and that's why I've invested my time, that's why I'm donating, just goes an incredibly long way in terms of helping to bolster, support, contribute to that sense of a winning team that everyone wants to be a part of, and to actually reach new people. And finally, earned media. I know you talked about this a lot in your past modules, an incredibly important effort. I think what's important here, in addition to getting your message out, is to think about the same principles that we talked about in other mediums, to think about those validators, to think about the visuals. Where you hold certain events is just as important as what you're saying to them. Who's doing the intro is incredibly important in terms of reinforcing the message. So I think it's very easy to focus on the principle, but to think about how all those things work together, right? So I was thinking about this actually with a Clinton campaign where she released, this is in 2015, actually before I was with the campaign, but in 2015, she released sort of her very kind of comprehensive platform on the environment. It was a large speech. In thinking about how to leverage that, the campaign made a shortened video with sort of the best snippets of that campaign with some powerful visuals. It actually wasn't of her speaking, but it was juxtaposed with powerful visuals to tell that story, because again, we know that visuals matter. And the very next day, she did a tour in Iowa of sort of a really innovative transfer station that was kind of using renewable energy to fuel it. And so you've got major policy speech coupled with powerful visual that's distributed online, coupled with sort of an earned media press tale that all reinforces the core message in a way that was particularly resonant to Iowa voters, which was obviously the focus given the upcoming caucus. So thinking about how those things weave together and all the different aspects of your media strategy is incredibly important. Thinking about the different reporters that you engage in your work, and then finally making sure that you connect to the local, right? So last year on the campaign, we actually had a master spreadsheet of all the battleground states, and we talked about what are the key issues with the speechwriting team to make sure that those were woven in. We mined our story database that we talked about, and we also made sure that the field asks were connected because there were different things that we asked for at different points in the campaign. And so making sure that the coverage included that was incredibly important, right? Maybe it was a registration ask if we were coming up against a voter registration deadline. Maybe it was an early vote ask, making sure that all of those things were woven together and were reflected in the press coverage coming out of it. That's the integration that you're shooting for. Paid media and mail. In addition to how are you amplifying your message in terms of through the press and through all the various outlets, mail is incredibly important. We've actually done a lot of testing on this, and we know, particularly for older voters, they read mail. And so this matters and is a key source of information and will influence how someone will ultimately vote, particularly older voters. And this is where you want to make sure that there's connections, right? It can feel like you're saying the same thing over and over again. That's actually a good thing, right? This needs to echo what you're hearing directly from the candidate, what they're reading in the press and in the letters to the editor section, which people still read in incredible amounts, and also what they're potentially hearing from their friends. And lo and behold, they also have a volunteer at the door who's saying the same thing. So making sure that that's connected, again, same principles apply. The visual really, really matters and has to be locally relevant, right? So you can't have someone who just doesn't look at all like the place where they're, the key demographic that you're going for. So making sure that that local resonance is key. So we just did a tour of the campaign, all the different departments and various ways that you can get engaged. In addition to the kind of lessons learned in terms of overall integration, there are just some common things that happen, even with the best designed managed campaign. These are just things to look out for. First and foremost is the tone deafness, right? You work so hard on your message frame, you practice it, you practice it, you practice it, and the world evolves, right? Or it sounds really great in your strategy session, and you actually go and talk to voters, and it just doesn't make sense, right? And you're so, at this point, you're invested, right? It's your message, you wanna stay on there, you spent a lot of time and energy. And I think there's a balance to be struck between staying true to who you are, right, and sort of keeping consistent and being disciplined while also being responsive to the time and to what you're learning as a campaign. And especially in these times, things are moving really quickly. And so that's why that internal meeting structure is so important, right? That daily 9 a.m. meeting where you're reviewing the message of the day, the message of the week, and you're also talking about what people are hearing. It's not just a habit. It's actually constructive, and it's going to help you evolve your message to make sure that it continues to resonate while staying true to who your candidate is. Second thing is like not being prepared for the opposition. Campaigns are not run in vacuums. There is an opponent. If you're in a primary, there's going to be more than one, and you want to make sure that you are both talking about the opposition, but also being cognizant. And I know that you went through the exercise around the message box, but that's important that it's reflected in all the various aspects of the campaign and not just what the candidate is speaking about. And so making sure that that exercise and that people understand what the contrast looks like is incredibly important. And then I think finally is the missed opportunities, right? Thinking about how to take advantage of when you need to push back, which is the defensive, but also when you can go on the offensive. When does something happen that you can really pounce on, and what does that rapid response look like? So we'll show that example in terms of a video with a senator. But you don't want to be so wedded to the campaign plan that you don't recognize moments and sort of those diamonds in the rough when they appear. Couple case studies to just illustrate these points. First is Carlos Cabello, which I think you talked about in a previous module. So represents the 26th Congressional District in Florida, previously was on the school board. And here's just a really great example of just that very kind of the positive echoing of message, right? So sort of environmental focus is not just like a policy statement, it's actually like a core aspect of him as a candidate and something that he actively campaigned on. And so he really thought about how that campaign got out through all of the channels in a way to reinforce this is a core priority and he understands this district and what environmental issues mean in this district, right? So he's not just talking writ large, he's not talking theoretically, he's talking about the Everglades, he's talking about specific issues that make sense in a Florida context. So you see this in terms of, you know, the Instagram post, right? He's spending time in the Everglades National Park, right? Where you spend your time, where you choose to do activities and events, but most importantly, the candidate's time is incredibly important. So lots of visuals here, and then also had the press release, sort of similar to the Iowa example that I talked about with Clinton, right? Really thought about doing a press release, and then what was a press optic in terms of an off-the-record event or kind of a walk-by that would reinforce that key aspects of his policy or of his speech. You can only cover so much of a speech, and so having the visual of going to a place that really makes sense, and then finally, can really reinforce kind of the core points. And then finally, really lifted up his endorsements, right? So we talked about that political operation and thinking about leveraging validators. So you see that in terms of his amplification of core endorsements. Just to wind down, and then would love to get questions. First and foremost, understand your pathway to victory. You could have the smartest, most eloquent message possible, but if it's not anchored in a core pathway to victory and an understanding of your strategy to win, it's not gonna be successful. And the more you know about your targets, the more effective you're gonna be. Use all the channels. Again, I think when we think a lot about message, we think sort of our mind goes to like candidate speeches, and that's just not true in terms of how an effective campaign should run. So think about how to stay disciplined to your core message, but how to translate it to all of the different mediums of your campaign and how those together are reinforcing. But make sure that they're all talking to each other, right? You don't want the person managing your Twitter account to be all of a sudden making news because they're commenting on something that actually goes against a core policy or isn't something that you have developed yet. So that integration that's built and reinforced through those daily meetings, ongoing conversations, department goals will help you take advantage of all the resources that you have for your campaign, but also keep you out of trouble. So now I'd love to open up for questions.
How would you keep the focus on local and particularly local environmental issues when there's a, say, national issue that's drowning out a lot of media attention?
I mean, I think one is being realistic. I think sometimes campaigns can try to do too much and basically end up falling flat. So if there's a dominant national issue that needs attention, you gotta stay focused on that and be resonant. At the same time, I think this is where having those concrete anecdotes, but also using additional validators, right? So it's not just the campaign, it's a chorus of voices talking about an issue can be really successful. This was a challenge in the Clinton campaign last cycle because Trump was basically making news every single day, or at least it felt like that. And so we had to find creative ways. And what we found is going hyper-local and having additional storytellers that then could talk about their lived experience that would generate press, bring in additional people, and we would then bridge that to the campaign itself. What we found, and that's where it's like being realistic, is like what we found is you weren't going to break news at the national level, and thinking about national outlets, you just had to be realistic, and often that meant being more reactive and doing more of the contrast, right? At the local level, you actually can get coverage, particularly if you've got a local constituent who's talking about an issue. So actually an example of this is toxic algae in Florida. Where huge issue that had tons of local relevance. Nationally, that was not a place where we're gonna spend time, but it was important. And so we went back and forth about how to attack it and then essentially had a policy statement and made news with it. So I think especially in today's news cycle and hyper-polarized political environment, you have to be realistic about the national coverage. Other questions?
I've got a question. Yeah, you've talked a lot about kind of just a ton of moving pieces, and if you're running a really small campaign, that can be overwhelming. Are there a couple of things that we can really do, like the morning call? Are there other things like that that would be really helpful for a smaller campaign?
So we talked a lot about the morning meeting. I think there are a couple of other really organizing elements that I can talk about. I think this is really important. Like, you are moving very, very quickly, and there's a lot of moving pieces and a lot of people speaking on behalf of the candidate, whether they're staff or volunteers. And so spending time to think through your internal communication structure is incredibly important. And often something that can go overlooked. So in addition to kind of that morning meeting for your senior team, having a coordinated and central campaign calendar to really help organize around in terms of what is happening. Typically your message calendar drives that, and candidate time. So where is your candidate going? That's gonna be sort of the core organizing principle, but making sure that all departments have visibility on that. And also that senior leadership, whether it's your campaign manager or just another department, understands what other departments are doing. So that's where it's also important to think about, you know, key fundraising deadlines, voter registration deadlines. When does GOTV start? Are you doing a dry run or a practice for GOTV? Making sure that that is incorporated so the right hand is talking to the left hand is incredibly important in terms of like the drumbeat of operations. I think another thing that's really important, particularly around content movement, is just making sure that you are very clear about your approval structure, especially with social media that's happening so quickly, but it could also be an email, which can be more planned. You really need to think about who's approving what and how do you design a system where there's appropriate review without bottlenecking. And there's a lot to review, and you got to review it for both message discipline, but also compliance. And so we had a very clear hierarchy of review when it came to voter contact scripts, mail, social media, email. And that's incredibly important to make sure that you basically don't have unforced errors. So central calendar kind of reviewing structure, and then also just talking proactively about rapid response. So who gets to call what shots when something happens? Is really, really important. And so, you know, we had to have an understanding about who was team captain in those moments and what was the flow of information. Hierarchy is incredibly important in campaigns, and it's got to be respected, and that's something that everyone needs to be bought in on or it doesn't work, even for small teams, right? And an understanding of where they go into. So very, very important. All the campaigns that I've worked on recently have done strategic retreats, you know, sort of to get together and really organize, and frankly, to do some practice. I mean, I remember doing role-playing around our message frame with Robbie Mook at one of our staff retreats. And you could think, oh, I don't have time to do that. You do, and it always pays it really pays off to spend that time together. Any other questions? Yes.
So say you have a newer candidate that's facing an established candidate, and generally I think candidates that are earlier in their stages are a little nervous about going on the negative and on the offensive when mm-hmm. facing somebody that's already established. Do you have any advice on any indicators on when they should do that or when the right time to pounce is for them?
Yeah, that's such a great question, particularly for these times. So in my experience, you do need to do both. And candidates, I think, naturally have a tendency, I think more tend to want to just be positive, but some people just really love to go at it and be negative, and it's gotta be a balance. I think we've seen that going completely negative, being, you know, anti, is not enough. People need something to vote for, and so they need to hear a compelling vision and clear articulation of who you are in order to vote for you, in addition to what you are not and who your opponent is. But you do need to provide that contrast, and especially in the 2018 cycle where you're gonna have very, very crowded fields, right? Lots of people are raising their hands. And saying, I want to run, you've got to differentiate and you've got to connect the dots for voters about what you are, but also who your opponents are, and to help them translate the difference. You know, your opposition research will help you understand what to level against them, right? What have they said before? What actions have they taken? But you also, you need to, I think, find moments where that feels organic and sort of rational, right? That's where I think the combination of having the research, right? You know kind of how you want to provide the contrast, but having it be somewhat triggered by something that's happening in the larger world or something that they've said to make a key point, I think comes across in a much more effective way with voters. But the reality is you got to do both. And I think helping to practice and prepare for opposition and contract messaging is really important, particularly for first-time candidates, so that they feel comfortable and authentic to who they are while still providing a clear contrast and holding an incumbent accountable, right, for things that they've said or actions that they've taken. Great question.
Would you tailor your message differently to activists who are super involved in environmental issues versus those who are not?
That's a great question. I think, first of all, realize that every opportunity is public. So around core messages, you can't be saying one thing to your people and a different thing externally around what really matters and the substance of issues. We've seen a lot of hot mic moments. We've seen, you know, candidates addressing donors that leaks. So it is important that there's alignment and synergy. That being said, I do think that there's tailoring that you do to activists. And a lot of that is, I think, really talking about what's at stake, giving them perspective around the progress that they've made, and connecting the dots between the actions that they're taking and winning the campaign, right? So we need to knock on this many doors because that's fundamentally how we're going to win this. And you, as an individual, have just a vitally important role in making sure that we reach that goal. So it's actually much more about, I think, activities, and involvement and connecting the dots between that, winning the campaign, and then furthering the issues they care about. And it's important to be celebratory and to find ways to basically celebrate wins within the larger campaign. So I always like to think about smaller campaigns, especially when it comes to voter contact and volunteers. So the best example of that is A Weekend to Have Action, right? And A Weekend of Action is a weekend of canvassing. It's actually no different, but you can make it feel different in the sense of it's a big thing. It's a key way to test your organization. It's a key way to bring in new people. And it's amazing how people respond to that. And it's really fun and it feels energetic. And you can even create a contest between, you know, one region of your campaign and another one. And it works every single time. It's not a gimmick. Like, it actually, I think, is real, but it's a way of also feeling a sense of progress and connecting the dots between the work and winning. And that's, at the end of the day, what people care about. Well, thank you, everyone. This was really great to have this time with you. Hopefully this was helpful in terms of thinking about how to actually operationalize your campaign. How does it all work, and how to make it work for you and your candidate? Hope that you will stay tuned for Module 4 with my colleague, Hari. It's gonna talk a lot about how to run effective campaigns in this day and era. So communicating through chaos, particularly in kind of a Trump administration. So lots of great stuff for you to learn that will be very relevant, I think, to all of your campaigns. But thank you.